right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Sussman.
Hey everybody, this is Mark Sussnell, and you are listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, the show that makes a difference, the show that hopefully will inspire you to think greater, to do things that maybe you thought were beyond your reach. And I know that's kind of something for all of us. We all have a comfort zone, and quite often we're reluctant to step out of that comfort zone. So what I've done is every week I've invited people who hopefully can inspire us to step out of our comfort zones, to think in a different way. And a lot of times I run into people like that. I hear about them. Sometimes I get emails from publicists. Their clients have written a book. And today I have somebody on our show that I think is consistent with the type of people that we've had on before. His name is Charlie Harari. And he wrote a book called Unlocking Greatness. And it's really about the unexpected journey from the life you have to the life you want. And I see that Charlie has just joined us, and he's an author. He's an internationally known speaker, and he's also senior director of capital markets at RXR Realty, and he also has his own show and a podcast. And welcome, Charlie Harari, to the Inspire Possibility Show.
Thank you so much. What an honor to be on. I really appreciate it.
Good. Well, I'm glad to have you. Make sure you speak into the phone. Anyway, thanks for joining me. I think it's going to be an interesting concept you have here, unlocking greatness. What do you mean by that, unlocking greatness?
So when I was doing the research for this book, I came across again and again. It was this common misconception that people have when they are pursuing something. You know, the book opens up with this idea of being perpetually unsatisfied. You see people all the time like this, right? They walk around and they are perpetually unsatisfied. And the question is why? They may have so many things that I think their grandparents or great-grandparents would have been like, yeah, if I can have one of those things, I'd have the best life ever. And they have them all. And I'm not taking away from people that are going through pain, but, you know, there's a sense of this sort of nagging dissatisfaction. And so at first, when I was doing the research for the book and speaking and lecturing about this topic, I would think it was work harder, right? Do more, think about your problems, come up with better solutions, make more money. And I started to delve into it on the science and the spirituality. And what I uncovered, what I realized was that wasn't it at all. The source of the dissatisfaction was there's a misconception in which we think that greatness is outside us. Right? If I can get there, I'll be great. When we're little, they tell us, if you can get this letter next to your name, you'll be a great student. And then if you can get into this college, you'll be great. And if you can get into these few jobs that we consider in our society to be the best jobs, there you go. And if you hit this level of net worth, and you just keep it up, and society throws trophies at you and says, yeah, that's what greatness is. And what I found
what you're saying,
is that
Charlie, let me. What you're suggesting is that really, it's really about self-image.
It's really about recognizing that the greatness that we want is an intangible feeling of empowerment that will manifest the world, but what we feel inside us, and that's inside. See, we all have a reservoir inside us. We all have an intangible power, a spirit, a soul, something bigger that moves us And it's something intangible that the physical world doesn't even compare to. And what makes us feel great is the journey that's inside, right? It's not becoming great. It's revealing it. We all have it. It's just that along the way, we throw blocks up in front of our minds, in front of our perspectives, in front of our feelings that lead us off. But if we just stop and realize that, okay, I got all the greatness that I ever want. Now, how do I unlock that? How do I shift my perspective? How do I change who I am in order to figure that out?
What are some of the roadblocks that we throw up? You were talking about roadblocks.
So, there's so many things that we do along the way, and one of them is we are constantly trying to, when we speak about this in the middle of the book, we are trying to become significant. That's an internal desire. But the way we define significance is really based on our society. So as a young individual, they'll define it as getting this particular grade or trophy. So the roadblocks that we throw up is, if I get this, then I'm going to feel something. And if I don't, then there's something wrong with me or I won't get it. And what happens is our cloud and starts to assume that unless I am able to connect to the symbols around me, there's something wrong with me.
So we got our wires crossed is kind of what you're saying.
Right. And we don't realize is that – sorry, yeah, you were saying.
We kind of need to rewire ourselves.
Yeah, and the way that works really is, in the beginning of the book, we speak about this in terms of perspective, right? And the story I tell always is, you know, I'm a Giant fan. And when remember the 2008, back when, you know, the Giants were making Super Bowls, and, you know, now, I mean, New England is in Super Bowl every single year. It's like, you know, Super Bowls are now New England Invitationals.
And but, I'm a 49er fan. I'm a
49er
fan.
Okay. So you know, back in
I
the old days.
I remember one game,
right?
When the Giants, play the 49ers, and I think our punt returned a fumble twice, and I remember that.
Yeah, and you remember these moments, right? And I remember when,
yes,
you know, the Giants played the Patriots in 2008. If you remember the game, and the Patriots were undefeated, and they were winning towards the very end. And Eli Manning threw that incredible pass, and David Terry made the catch on his helmet, and they won the Super Bowl. So I was sitting in you know, my friend's house in Long Island, New York, with 15, 20 guys around the TV, going insane, like going nuts. And next to me was a friend of mine who was from Boston, which makes it only better, by the way. But he was sitting from Boston, and he was in such pain. And I remember going home, and I had this thought, and it really started me down a couple of roads that is now chapters of the book, was the thought that I had was, it didn't make sense to me. Right, we are in the same reality. We are observing, if you will. We are experiencing the same reality. The two of us are good friends. We live in the same community. Our wives are friends. Our kids are friends. We're watching the same game at the same moment in time. And we're both staring at the screen in real time. And I'm staring at the screen, and I'm feeling amazing. He's staring at the screen, and he's feeling terrible. How? And the answer is that it's not the reality that makes us feel something. It's our perspective of reality that makes us feel something. And
right.
This in the book,
I agree.
We speak about this. It's called The Schema. It's researched by a man named Jean Piaget. And I have this in the chapter where he discovered over time that your mind actually has what he calls a filter called a schema. And everything that's going on in your life, it's filtering through this schema. And your schema is based on your experiences, your past, your history, what you believe, right? So as a kid, I grew up in a town, and because it was in New York, they told me, those guys are your team, and those colors are your colors, and Lawrence Taylor and Phil Simms and the whole deal. And my friend grew up a few miles north, and they said, no, it's Drew Bledsoe and whatever. It's a different game.
Yeah.
But now the two of us walk into this one experience, right, with different schemas. One schema says Giants, one schema says Patriots, and then we look at the same reality, and what we feel are totally different feelings. Because it's not about the reality. It's about your mind and your schema. And that's how you have some people, they walk through their lives and they don't know that the reason why they're disempowered isn't because the boss doesn't like them or their spouse doesn't respect them. It's because they see the world through the perspective that is causing them to be disempowered. they see the world through a perspective of maybe I deserve more, or I'm not good enough, or everyone should work for me, or whatever that belief that they have. And if they would stop trying to control the world and start trying to control their minds a little bit more, they would feel differently, and then ultimately the world around them would be different.
So in your book, Charlie, do you get into how you can work with controlling? You're talking about controlling the mind. Do you get into giving people some ideas about how they can work controlling the mind?
Yeah, I mean, well, the first thing that people need to understand is what's going on. And I find that people, I mean, who has the time for it, right? I mean, like, we're all busy. Who has time to, like, sit around and study your mind? Usually you have to read some complicated, you know, neuroscience book, which is, you know, after a few seconds, totally boring. It's interesting to some people, but not to most. Or you get stuck with, like, a couple, like, sort of, like, you know, maxims and memes, like, you know, whatever your mind can do, shape and create. And people sort of, they sort of hear that and know it's true, and they move on with their lives. So the first, my first goal with the book is to, in a very simple and clear way, teach everyday people what, to a little extent, is going on in your mind so that you can understand how it works, so that you can understand what neuroplasticity is and how your thoughts shape your mind, and how a lot of the things you want in life aren't that complex to get. It's just a couple of adjustments in terms of how to see things, how to have some habits, how to gain some different perspective. And just those few little, like, tweaks along the way can really, really make a major shift in your life.
So let me ask you a question. You talk about neuroplasticity. Are you saying that, I know that neuroplasticity believes that your thoughts actually change the shape of your brain. Is that, am I correct with that?
Yes, totally. Right, neuroplasticity is the science. Please.
And what kind of studies are there to, you know, I've read a lot about this, and I'm just curious about what your insights are in terms of how do they prove that it actually changes the shape of your brain? I mean, is there research on this?
Yeah, I mean, this is tested research for 20 years. They see the structure of your brain. They see the brain activity. They see what happens with people in terms of rehabilitation, stroke patients, and people that are suffering from different illnesses and the exercises that they're using. I mean, there's some crazy – in the book, we have some crazy studies. I mean, there are studies of people that have right now as we speak, there are mechanisms where you could – where people that are blind could put a compressor on their tongue that's connected to a camera on their head and see objects. They literally can walk around and navigate objects through their tongue because they were able to teach the tongue, because your brain changes its beat, right? It changes its structure by your thoughts. Mm-hmm. So they can teach the tongue how to process images because the eyes couldn't take the information to the brain. Some of the stuff is just out. Like, it's just unbelievable. And in the book, we have a story of Ben Carson. Remember Ben Carson ran for president, right? Ben Carson was a surgeon. He was one of the most successful surgeons in John Hopkins history, and he has a whole piece about how he had a patient who came to him with these sort of never-ending seizures, and what they did was they literally removed half of her brain because they understood that neuroplasticity is part of how the brain works, and if they did it in a certain way young enough, the other parts of the brain will teach itself how to take over the functions of what they removed, and it will literally regenerate based on thought. And that's what they would do. I mean, there's some crazy studies out there of twins, if you will, that one twin was born with less of the brain than the other twin, but the twins grew up together. So when twin A with the regular brain started walking and crawling, twin B started mimicking. So as a result, the twin B who didn't have the brain functionality was able to get a little bit further along the curve than had he been born alone. And so there's so many blowaway studies today, and it's coming out every day about just how much our thoughts and thinking are shifting our minds.
And do you like have a recommendation in terms of how to create these thoughts that control our mind, in terms like a morning, like a meditation practice or affirmations or visualizations? What do you suggest there? Do you get into that in your book?
Yeah, a lot of in the book we speak about the ideas of rituals. What I try to do in the book is take the readers in the beginning through understanding your mind, right, going through the ideas of how does belief shape your reality? How does this work in a way that's not just sort of, I'm not just saying it, but I'm proving it, in a way that's easy to digest. And then we go into something a little deeper. What is it that we want in life? And then when we get to the practical elements of the book, what I suggest that people do is spend the time doing two different practices. And these are well-tested. These are practices being used by the Navy SEALs, by Olympic athletes, by world chess players. And these are visualizations where you write out or you think through the things that you want to accomplish, not so that this way the world sort of like universe sort of drops in your lap, so that your brain starts to have the thoughts of where you want to go. This is a major study done in the Navy SEALs where the Navy SEALs were not able to pass a certain test, and they had them think about the test before they went into the pool, and just thinking about it allowed them to sort of change how they were patient and how they managed stress and how they saw things, so that ultimately when they got into that test, they were much better at it. And so a lot of times in life, the reason why we're all thrown, the reason why we're not more successful is because our brain is seeing it for the first time when we experience it with our bodies. But when you have an imagination, you can actually sit beforehand and think about it and visualize it, and that starts to fire the neurons of your brain off, creating new structures so that when you get into the experience, you've been there already once before.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of athletes use that, and especially now with virtual reality. I mean, it's big time. So what I want to remind our listeners about your book, Charlie. So we're talking to Charlie Hariri. He wrote a book called Unlocking Greatness. I assume it's available on Amazon and most of the major bookstores?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. And you give talks on this? And how do people get a hold of you?
Sure, yeah. I have a podcast called Unlocking Greatness that they can, you know, sort of subscribe to. I've got a website, charliehariri.com. I give talks to companies, to corporations, to individual school students on a lot of these subjects that allow people to sort of tap into understanding themselves a little bit better.
Uh-huh. You know, I talked, before you actually joined us, I talked a little bit about the topic, and what I find is people have comfort zones, and they're very reluctant to get out of their comfort zone. And so and that's really what I think prevents people from achieving greatness, is that they got this belief system that they've had most of their life, and it's scary for them to kind of break away. And I think you're kind of alluding to the same thing, but in a different way.
I completely agree. You're absolutely correct. The greatest block that people have is exactly right. It's the comfort zone. And one of the things that I try to do in the book is teach people how to get around their comfort zones through using their mind properly. And the way I found great people do it, like how do great people become great? Like we live in this world and we think that like certain people are like born and like as if like they just came down from heaven as the best basketball player ever. And they just picked up a violin and they like just rocked at the nursery. And ever since then, it's been just one concert after the next. And that's not really how it happens. If you look at people, there are the very, very few people that are just, you know, something special. But most people that have achieved greatness that we know about, even world-class athletes, world-class performers, Olympic athletes, 99.9% of them did it through one way, and that is rituals. They never fought their comfort zone head-on. They never woke up in the morning and said, I am resolving to become a world-class at anything. What they did was they structured in their days specific, repeatable exercises, rituals, every day. Michael Phelps got in the pool at the same time every single day. Steph Curry shot the same shots every day. Tolstoy every day sat in front of that pen and paper. Grisham, you name them. If you look at their lives, they were obsessed with their rituals. And sometimes it was 2 in the morning and sometimes it was 2 in the afternoon. And what happens is when you take small actions every day, what you do is break through your comfort zone. You chip away at that wall. Every day you chip a drop and your brain starts to learn new functionality, and it chips at the comfort zone, it chips at the comfort zone, until one day your brain has learned so, has oriented around this ritual, right? It's so normal and natural for somebody that they wake up in the morning and they don't even realize it, but they are past their comfort zone. And that's how people really, over the course of a life, achieve their greatness.
Chipping away at that comfort zone. Changing your belief system. Get rid of those limiting beliefs.
Absolutely.
Do you kind of get into like talking about limiting beliefs in your book?
Yeah, because what happens is that limiting beliefs, we think that limiting beliefs are like just, you know, it's like eating like potato chips. Like, I know I shouldn't do it, but, you know, that's how I am. Like, we don't appreciate it because we don't see our minds. What limiting beliefs do is they, if the thoughts that you have change your brain, right? And if you have disempowered thoughts, you know what happens after a while? That just becomes who you are. Limiting beliefs, they're not just like hurting you for the moment, that you are conditioning them into your mind and making it a part of the fabric of your brain. And that is so detrimental because when you look out into the world, your schema, like we spoke about earlier, when you have your schema, those limiting beliefs are now a key element to that. And so when you have a new project or assignment that comes down your way when you're at work, or when there's a challenge in your family life, or there's a challenge in your life, and it's a challenge that not only can you overcome, but it'll make you better, right? It'll give you the opportunity that you're waiting for. You won't take it, not because you can't do it, but because you've allowed all of those limiting beliefs in your head for so long that your schema, your filter sees, I can't, I can't, I can't. And the person next to you sees, maybe I can. And if you look at people that have accomplished great things in life, many times it's really the difference between maybe I can versus I know I can't. And that's what limiting beliefs do. They limit your life.
They sure do. They sure do. So what about you right now? What is your, what inspires you right now?
So this book just came out, and I got to tell you, it's been such a long, long haul in trying to get all the research right and trying to see the way it works. Really inspires me, you're right, you've been down this road, right? You know how it is.
Three times.
Oh, so it's been such a wonderful, exhausting journey that I'm at the place where now we're like, oh, it is. It is, and you know, also it's a little vulnerable. You know, you hope people like it, you hope people buy it, you hope people, you hope you don't write it just for your mom and your wife. But like, you know, there's a certain that's how life works. I think what inspires me and excites me the most are the things that I am also most scared of, and I think that's what life is. I was telling someone, they asked me, what does it mean to be an author? And I said the following: tell me if you agree with this. Being an author three times over, I said to me, being an author is writing something that you want the whole world and nobody in the world to read at the exact same time.
Wow, I have to think about that.
Right?
That's a hard one. Well, what I found was being an author can be the most frustrating thing in the world and exhilarating. It can be all within the same minute or two. That frustration, right, and then that exhilaration. And it's true, because especially in the beginning, because sometimes people don't get what you're trying to get at, and it's very frustrating. And you have to have that tremendous drive and determination. And you do want to share your work with people. You want to know that you're making a difference. And but I like your title. I think it's a great – oh, here I am. It's a great title. How's that?
Thank you. And I mean,
Unlocking
thank
Greatness
you.
is a great title.
Thank you.
It is.
Thank you.
And titles
I appreciate
are so,
that.
Yeah. Are so hard to kind of come up with. And, boy, that's one of the hardest things. I know for some books, coming up with a title. The Unexpected Journey from the Life You Have to the Life You Want. And I know you start out the book talking about your friend Dave. And this idea of people have this idea of what it takes to be successful. And they have certain goals, and they achieve them. And then they wake up, and they go, I'm not happy. I got all these things that I thought I needed to be happy, but I'm not happy. And that's kind of what I got a little bit. You were bringing that up about your friend Dave. So what do you say to, so to those people, you say you have to look inside and really look at what your values are, I would think.
Yeah, and it goes, you're absolutely right, and it goes even deeper. When I studied Dave and I asked him how come he wasn't happy, the real reason why was because he was taking. You know, one of the aspects of the books, we speak about this idea of tapping into the metaphysical, going past your physical world. And what that means is when you are able to think of something else besides yourself, when you're able to sacrifice what you want for somebody else, for something else, for a cause, for a person, as you do that, what happens to you, and we go through the whole thing in the book, is you start to access a deeper piece of yourself. So try this out. Anytime you're ever in a bad mood, try this. If you're ever in a bad mood and you pass by a door, hold the door for the person behind you. Because what will happen is the second that person goes through that door, even if they don't smile, you're going to have this little hit of feeling good. Why? Because when you sacrifice, right, in this case you sacrificed a few minutes of your time for somebody else, you reach a deeper part of yourself. You reach the part that is getting to greatness. And so what happens is the more you do that, the more you condition that into your life, the more you are accessing your inner greatness. Because the true greatness that we have inside us is something in which we give to others. And they may give us back in terms of money or love, fine. I'm not saying everyone should be working for free. But if you really want to see why do certain people love their job, and why do certain people have that passion for getting up in the morning? It comes down to they are giving of themselves. They are sacrificing for something else, and that activity gives them that intangible feeling of, I got to deepen and deepen and get more and more of that. And by the way, that's really what makes them successful, right? That's really the secret.
Yeah.
That when you
I have
take
a little thing I like to add here is what I do when I'm not feeling well, feeling kind of down, I look in the mirror and I go, I got you, babe. And every time I do that, I start to laugh. And it's just a way to totally, it uplifts you because you do, most of the time you do laugh and you kind of, you get out of your funk. And again, it's just changing your perception of from darkness to joy. Because when you smile and laugh, you light up, and it just affects all your cells, your everything, your brain chemistry, and your neuroplasticity, and all that kind of stuff. And but I like your idea too. What I like to do is when I'm in a store and somebody's got a name tag, so often we don't say anything, but what I always try to do is say, "Thanks, Joe," and I encourage people
great.
To do that. Thanks, Joe.
That's great.
Because, you know, when I give talks to, and it's like, they don't have name tag to criticize them. It's to acknowledge them, because I think that's kind of one of the things you say in your book is that we want to be appreciated. We want to be acknowledged.
Yeah,
and
right.
I want to acknowledge
and
you. Yeah, yeah, because we're running out of time. We got a couple of minutes, but I do want to acknowledge you for putting out this book. I know how hard it is, and what commitment, what dedication, and it's a great topic, and I know that you've inspired a lot of people, and I noticed that I did watch the movie Rudy, and I see that for football fans, and I know you are because you've brought it up a few times about the Giants and the Patriots, and you did, The quote from Rudy, "Unlocking Greatness," is exactly the kind of book I love, a book that inspires people and lets them know it's entirely possible to get up and live the life of their dreams. And I think that, you know, you, just by saying that, it kind of gives us a vision and it inspires other people to kind of go for their dreams and to not give up.
Right. Well, thank you. It means so much to hear that, and your words are very kind and generous, and I really appreciate them.
Well, I enjoyed having you on the show, and I wish you well. I'm sure you're going to do well. And sometimes writing a book is a labor of love, and you never know who picks a book up, and it changes their life. And it's so gratifying to have someone come up to you and go, God, I read your book. It changed my life. And I wish that for you.
Thank you. I'll take that because you're right. That's it. That's what it's all about. It's that one person. And if you get that one feedback, it's all worth it.
So thank you, Charlie Harari, for being on the Inspire Possibility Show. And for you out there, thanks for listening. And remember, every week we have some amazing, inspiring people that hopefully will inspire you to get out of your comfort zone, to think bigger, greater, and to keep growing. Keep growing and realizing that we're on this lifelong journey. Sometimes it seems like a big mystery, and it is a And that's because it is a big mystery. So in the meantime, journey on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.